Hello and welcome to season 7 of Jet Lag the Game. I want air horns right here, Manny. Like, yeah, right here. Because this is incredibly exciting that we have made it through the depths of the off season, and we are back with a brand new season of the Layover Podcast and of Jet Lag the Game. But really, I mean, this is like the show.
Right. Well, it's like we make Jet Lag the Game just so that we have something to talk about on the layover.
Right. Yeah. So we're very excited to be back here. And we are back here in peak form. Isn't that right, Ben?
I do have COVID. To set the stage here, we've just returned from the streamies, in which many people, including myself, got COVID, although seemingly from the jet lag premiere event. So if you were there and you're listening to this weeks later, maybe you have COVID.
Sorry.
And sorry. And then Sam also seemingly just unrelatedly got food poisoning.
It was just like out of sympathy.
Yeah. That's a good boss.
I feel awesome.
Yeah.
And Adam feels awesome.
Adam feels awesome.
It's actually not true. I've been so, so sleepy since we got back. Like,
it's a big weekend.
Well, because part of what happened is that I was up very late at the after party, and then I had to get an early flight the next morning because I had to get back to New York for Maeve's show. So then I was out very late in New York because of the show. And I have been a very sleepy boy ever since.
Yep. Luckily, we have a long weekend coming.
Adam's problem is that he has too many fun things to go to.
Yeah. But anyways, we're back. And hopefully, y'all have now watched first episode of the season. And you now know that we are back in Charleville, France. And it's 6 a.m. And that bell, no, and that bell means it's 6 a.m. So we got to go, 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 right?
That is exactly right. I just was going to say, this is probably a rare instance where someone might be listening to the podcast before they watch the episode, because they might not have realized that the episode is up. Because they know the podcast is every week. They might have clicked on the podcast.
Well, anyways, go watch that. But I guess the first thing to talk about is like the thing that you now know, especially, is like we didn't change anything. Like this is literally Tag Across Europe again. Same location, same rules, same everything. The only difference is that we changed our end locations. So we did another random drawing basically off camera like we did last time, to pick which location would be to our finish line. The only rule is that we couldn't have the same location as last time. So we basically did a little bit of a shuffle on that. But aside from that, the exact same game. And like, we thought that that was specifically what would make it cool, right?
Yes. Well, I mean, I should also say there are new cards.
Yes, that's true.
You're not going to see any of the cards that you saw last time.
And I think some really good ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too.
I'm quite pleased with the challenges this season. But yeah, the whole idea, and I do think it's useful for us to all, you know, make this clear, because we saw many comments from people that were like, I can't wait to see how they change up the game. You know, these guys would never do the same thing twice. And it's like, we considered changing up the game. We considered different locations. We considered rule changes. We considered, frankly, things that we would consider rule fixes. Like, I think that there were flaws in the original version of the game that we had to there were all kinds of things that we kind of wanted to do, but we stopped ourselves from making any changes because the whole idea was, what if we took this game with its flaws, with its weaknesses, with, I would even say, things that could be exploited about it by competitors, right? And we just ran it back straight up again, right? Starting the exact same place, exact same end locations. And we were of the belief, and I mean, you'll, I guess, just have to see how it pans out. The idea was like, this game is so open-ended, we think it'll play out completely differently. And it's almost like a proof of concept. It's like, it's proof that these games can pan out in a number of different ways.
Yeah, I mean, I think the general thesis was like, we could maybe make the game like, I don't know, 15% better through some rule changes. But what's cool is to be able to compare the seasons, to be able to see how things pan out differently. So like that 15% betterness through fixing up the flaws in the game and tweaking stuff would be basically, like, the enjoyment of it would be, I don't know, say 25% more because of the ability to kind of see it play out again. And I don't think people will be disappointed.
I do not think people will be disappointed by this season. No.
I definitely don't think that this season just feels like a rehash of last time. I think that it will very much feel like its own season, which is great and has proved the concept we wanted to prove.
Mm-hmm. But I think one thing that was kind of weird with doing this whole season again was, like, all of the kind of prep, both, like, the, you know, the big picture prep, the pre-production prep that we do in, like, the month or two ahead of time, but even more so just, like, the actual, like, 24 to 48 hours leading up to starting in Charleville, France. Like, we had done that before. So we get to Paris and the whole, like, procedure or whatever of getting to the start, we had sort of done before. It's not like it's this crazy thing, but, like, we knew, like, exactly, like, oh, there's, like, the 5:30 or 6 p.m. one nonstop train a day to Charleville from Paris, whereas all the other trains require connections. We knew, like, exactly what hotel we wanted to stay at in Charleville, and we stayed at the exact same hotel. It was like, it was almost like another day at work, just getting back into it. We even, like, stopped at the same, you know, like, Relay convenience store. Actually, no, it wasn't the Relay. It was the M&S convenience store at Paris Gare de l'Est to get some food as last time. So it was like this weird mimicry of 1 year before. And especially all these moments that are just, like, I think absolutely, like, we just remember the jet lag moments in, like, so much detail, even, like, the pre and post production, because, of course, like, we're thinking about those for months after as we, like, do edits and talk about stuff and all that. So I would say, at least for me, it felt, like, weirdly practiced as we kind of got ready to get to the start.
Yeah, I would say I was so much more relaxed than before any other season of jet lag, because it was the first time that I had confidence that the game would work.
Mm-hmm.
Because every time we do one of these seasons, we're terrified that the game is not going to work, that it's going to break down or not be interesting or whatever. In this one, I was just, like, absolutely chilling. I had a great little, like, because we had what? Just one night in Paris? Or were we there for 2 nights?
We had one night in Paris.
I think you had one night in Paris, one night in Charleville.
One night in Paris, yeah.
Yeah, so more than last year.
I had a great time in Paris. I had just a swell little day there. I went to this restaurant that my brother had been to when he and his wife visited Paris called Le Poulbeau. And I walked around and I had just a swell time.
I will also say we got to, like, see much more of Charleville this time than we did last time. Because last time we got to Charleville quite late and then we just basically went right to sleep and woke up and were out of there at first thing next morning. This time we went and we got dinner in Charleville and we went to this weird ass, like, do you remember this restaurant?
There's a burger place and it was bad.
It was real bad.
It was tough because, like, we were trying to get dinner really early so we could get to sleep really early. And, like, nothing was open at 6 p.m. because, like, people eat a little bit later there, except for, like, this random burger place. And Adam always gives me flack for trusting Google reviews too much. But in fairness, this was a rare instance in which he was right, because it had, like, 4.4 stars on Google.
It's an extremely common instance in which Google Maps reviews are useless.
They're better than TripAdvisor. TripAdvisor food reviews are terrible.
Every cocktail that this restaurant served had marshmallows in it, which I thought was cool.
That part was awesome.
Yeah, that was the only good part of the restaurant.
No, their cocktails were awesome, but it was a weird burger place. But, I mean, yeah, it was nice to walk around Charleville.
What I would say about Charleville was I was frankly shocked to discover, like, how big it was and how many people lived there. Because my experience of it before had been getting there very late and going immediately to bed and then getting up very early in the morning and then leaving. I had only been there when everyone was asleep. And so being there, like, in the afternoon / evening, like, I was like, oh my God, this is, like, sort of a not tiny town. And there's, like, lots of people around and there's, like, restaurants and stuff. Like, in my mind, Charleville was like this tiny podunk place that nobody was. And it was like, oh no, it turns out it's actually, like, a bustling city.
Yep.
Yeah, it's quite happening. But maybe it just blew up since last season. Maybe it's expanded because of TAG. It's really become a metropolis.
I got like a Twitter DM or a tag or something from some people who started their like kind of like fan-based version of TAG Across Europe from Charleville like a week after we were filming. So there was at least like three or four people that went there because of jet lag. So maybe you're right. Anyways, so in summary, Charleville is kind of a cool French town. I would say, having lived in France, like, I find it remarkable. Like, I remember ranting to you about this, Adam. Like, every, like, medium-sized French city, or, like, small to medium-sized French city, they're, like, identical.
Yes.
But, like, they're all delightful, but they are identical, and they all have, like, the old city center. It's all, like, pedestrianized mall. There's one big central square that has the Hotel de Ville, the city hall, and it's like the actual like layout is almost always the exact same. It's kind of remarkable, and Charleville definitely fits in that category. But anyways, we had a delightful little explore, and we retreated back to our Hotel Dormeur de Val or something. I don't know. Same place we stayed at last time. Awesome place. Big fan. It's weird. How would you describe the hotel?
It's the whole bottom floor, other than your room. The whole thing is like it's made of chrome. It's so metallic, and there are like weird little like chrome sculptures around, and it sort of feels like you're in a spaceship.
Well, I believe it's aviation themed, the whole hotel.
Is it? Is that why it looks like that?
There's like propellers and shit everywhere. Or maybe it's just weird theme. I don't know. Again, I think we've said this before, but Sam just likes when a hotel is weird.
It's true. That is what he loves.
Yeah. Well, first of all, like, random Marriotts are weird. Second of all, there are no random Marriotts in Charleville. So it's the best spot in Charleville, I promise. And it's a great deal. It's like $100.
No, I'm not disputing it. I'm just saying, I think, Sam, you would have to agree. You do tend to like your hotels to be quite, like, unusual and eclectic in their decor.
I like my Citizen M's, my Moxie's. It's a whole class of hotels. It's basically like hotels that are trying to appeal to millennials. I've read into the travel industry. I've read the trades magazines about this. The whole concept is millennials, they want cheap, nice, small stuff. It's like they don't care about space. They want it to be nice, but small. And so the whole idea is you make a really small room, and then you put lots of good amenities in like the lobby and stuff, because millennials like co-working and stuff, I guess. I don't know. Anyways, it's a whole new wave of hotels. But yes, you're right.
Oh, whoa. Maybe it is aviation themed, because I just found the picture of the like little French aviator guy. Remember this guy? This guy looks like he would be like a robot butler or something.
Yeah. Was he in the hotel?
Yeah, he's in there. He's like on the second floor.
I don't remember there being a little robot guy.
The whole hotel to me is like, this is the exact vibe of the whole hotel.
It's a great hotel.
This guy, too. There's a bunch of, like, weird metal robots just sort of sitting around the hotel. This is my take on it. Anyway.
Okay, but we're getting off track. Because now we sleep. And then we wake up and time to jet lag. So, anyways, I mean, you probably saw this in the show, but, like, just like last year, they have, like, the exact same, like, weird, like, beach in the middle of the city set up in that central square.
They did. It's absolutely true.
So like, it's like identical. I mean, like literally like the little cutouts that Adam and I go into at the start, like those exact ones were there last year in like basically the same spot. So again, really weird to like go to this kind of random French city that not a lot of people have heard of and just have like an identical experience and for it to feel like our start procedure or whatever. But yeah, I mean, like weirdly relaxed, and then we start.
Yes, we do start. Well, and one thing that's worth mentioning about the start was that we had not predetermined who would be going where, right? So the only rule was that you couldn't be going to where you had gone before.
Yeah. And another thing is like, we actually really didn't want Ben to go first because we didn't want the start to feel too similar to the start of last time. But the start order or the order progression was decided by the locations, and Ben just happened to pull the one that required going first. So that's how we ended up with kind of like a somewhat similar start. But aside from that, we shuffled up pretty well. I was very happy to get Jersey because, like, that was the one I wanted last time, I believe.
It is the one you wanted last time, yeah.
Yeah, but then I had, I think, second choice or something last time. But it's one I wanted because, like, first of all, it's a very hard one to actually get to the end location because the Jersey ferries are very irregular. Like, I think there's like two a day or something from France, at least, many more from England, but, you know, much more complicated to get to England in the first place. But getting close to Jersey is by far the easiest.
Yes, that's true.
Because the train to Rennes, which is kind of the biggest major city close to Jersey, that train only takes like an hour and 20 minutes from Paris. It's like super high speed. They just upgraded that train line like 4 or 5 years ago. So it's one of the highest speed in France these days. And the other thing is, like, I lived in Rennes. That is home territory for me. I know that area intimately. And also, like, to be honest, like, knowing French, speaking French is an advantage. It's not a massive one, but it is an advantage. So, you know, having the majority of my run area within France, I considered an advantage. So I was very happy to get Jersey this time. But what about y'all? How did you feel about your selections?
I was not pleased. I tell you what.
I was not happy.
Yeah, German plus Deutschbahn is tough stuff.
I did not want Borkum. I think we all agree that Borkum is the worst one. I think that would be widespreadly agreed, is it not? Borkum as the worst one?
No, it's certainly the hardest one. It's a very tricky one.
And most notably, you know, because, I mean, depending on if you go through the Netherlands or Germany, if you go through Germany, you know, you have to deal with Deutschbahn, which is a bad train company.
Mm-hmm.
They are not good at their trains.
I think the only real thing that Borkum has going for it is there's a lot of density of train options between kind of Charleville and Borkum versus, like, there's a lot less optionality to, for example, like Rennes or to, you know, Saint-Malo. So that's one thing it's got going for it. But aside from that, it's a tough one. And it, you know, goes through, I find navigating, not only dealing with Deutschbahn, but navigating Germany and navigating the Deutschbahn stations and all that, a lot tougher.
Yeah.
So agreed. But yeah, I mean, you got the last choice.
And I didn't even get to go first. I didn't even get to go first. So I had the worst one and I had to go second. So overall, I was not pleased.
Mm-hmm. Ben, how did you feel?
I mean, I would have been happy with either of my options, you know, Zermatt or Jersey. And I was fine with Zermatt. I mean, it's certainly like the most epic win location. And I think we were all going into this season thinking, like, because we all had more experience, the chance of the game ending with someone getting to their location was probably more likely than the first time, you know, given that we all just knew more. So I was pretty excited to have such an epic vista for my end location.
Mm-hmm. But that required you going first, which was...
I did.
How did you feel about that?
Well, the thing is, for whatever reason, I had not prepared myself for that possibility at all. I was, like, very much...
Like, emotional preparedness?
Yeah, I was very much ready to, like, have 45 minutes of time to chill that morning.
Yeah, I would not have wanted to just have to, like, go right into a run myself.
But you know what? That's how the cookie crumbled, and I was off.
The cookie did crumble, of course. I mean, if you've seen the episode, you know that the cookie did, in fact, crumble for Ben.
Not as quickly as last season.
No,
but
not as quickly.
No,
but eventually it did.
Well, it would have crumbled quite quickly if that TGV had not been canceled.
That's true. That's true. That well, funny. It is very funny that if that train just hadn't been delayed, we just would have gotten you straight away because you didn't even realize that that train existed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep. No, not at all. Not at all. And in fact, I wasn't even thinking about the fact that there were two major train stations in that town.
I feel like you got to fire up your brain into jet lag mode. It takes a little bit of like getting back into it to realize all the optionality and stuff like that.
Yeah. It's confusing. Why are there two? There should be one. This is my opinion.
Because one's on the high speed line, one's on the slow speed line.
Yeah.
Fine.
Well, and one really funny thing about like the way we had to edit that was we had so much discussion about like, well, if Ben has figured out that we did this, but also figured out our train was delayed, like, he's going to do this and that and the other. And we were operating, I mean, it doesn't totally come across in the edit because we just included the brief discussions of Ben not knowing what was going on because that was the case. But like, it was very funny to learn that ultimately you were right about where we were because you had been wrong about two different things that together made you right. Like, you hadn't realized that the train existed, which means that you also hadn't realized it was delayed, which means that it was good that you never realized it existed because we were ultimately on the train that you thought we were on, but only because you did not know about two separate pieces of information you should have known about.
And that, folks, is what we call 4D chess. What I will say, and I mean, I don't know how chronologically we want to be working here, but, you know, generally, something that is very notable about this game versus last game is that we were doing this on a weekend, whereas when we did it the first time, it was on a weekday. And so the options, especially in the very early morning, in all of the stations were much, much more limited. There were far fewer trains than there were the first time. And so my whole thinking going into it was like, there are really not that many options for me. And so I'm kind of just going to get on the best possible train at every moment, because in pretty much every case, there was just like, well, this is my only option is to get on this train. And then it's my only option to get on this train. And it's my only option to get on this train. And, you know, had I completed the challenge that I had done a little sooner, my options would have been better. But all of our optionality in the very early morning was much more limited this time than last time, which may have not been obvious.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say, yeah, I don't know, and we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but like, I don't know that I could make that strong of an argument that you made too many mistakes, Ben. I mean, you pulled a card, you did it about as quickly as you could have. I mean, there were not gold bears at the station where you were, which, by the way, is a funny thing because that was not the intention of that card. Because like, you know, we all knew and had seen in the past, like, there are Haribo gummies all over the damn place in that country, like in vending machines, you know, wherever. And so the fact that there were so many Haribo gummies, but not gold bears, which I guess is just our American bias, because in America, the gold bears are by far the most common Haribo snack. Like, that was not supposed to be the hard part of that challenge. Was finding them was supposed to be easy.
Well, the geography of where we happened to start out was also weird because overwhelmingly the high-speed train lines in France and kind of across Europe, they go through city centers because they're all basically built to go to the main stations in the middle of towns. But for some reason, and I don't fully know why, this high-speed line, the one from Paris to Strasbourg, it was built in a way that the stations are sort of like on the outskirts of cities or just like vaguely near cities. So all of these stations were pretty much just stations and they weren't really near anywhere. Basically between Champagne-Ardin and Strasbourg, there were like three or four stations in between and they all had the same deal. So that was a tough bit because you were pretty much down to what was at the station. And as you see later in the episode, some of these are like literally just like a station in the middle of a field. So that was tough. So like, all in all, I don't know how much more you could have done there. I think in a way you were a bit of a sacrificial lamb to break us out of kind of that awkward geography around Charleville. I think the other thing worth acknowledging that we don't actually acknowledge this in the episode because we wanted to edit this season in a way that was not spoilery, at least not massively spoilery for the last tag, just in case people watch this and then want to go watch the last tag. But we'll assume that all of you have seen the last tag. Like, we started right where we ended in Champagne-Ardin. Like, that station, you know, if you remember, like, Adam basically walked just south, I think, out of that station into a field.
Yeah, a few miles.
And then that's where we finished, which was a weird experience, once again, to be, you know, back in a station that was really just, like, burned into our minds from last time. But it was also a reminder that I don't think we fully, like, we realized this theoretically, but it was funny in practice to feel just how close our end location last time was to our start location.
Yeah, that was
just like a 45-minute train ride away. I never really fully internalized that. It shows how ridiculous the overall chronology of last season was.
It's true. It's true. I want to talk about how you got your hand stuck in the vending machine. How How did it happen twice?
It was very heavy, the door. It was just weirdly heavy. There's not much more to say there, really.
Right, but after the first time...
Well, after the... I still needed a little water, and there weren't any other options, so I had to brave the vending machine once again, and I did. And eventually I got my hand out, and so I made it through. You know, in these games, you gotta roll with the punches.
I mean, I really can't tell you, like, watching that clip, because we're cutting things out as we edit, like, and putting them in the timeline... And I saw Ben get his hand stuck in the vending machine. And I was like, this is so funny. And I was like already in my head thinking about like how we were going to use it and realizing I could pair it with mentioning that he went to Brown, which was, you know, I thought really funny. And then like, I'm like, this is good. This is so great. This is so funny that he did this. And then to keep watching the clip and to see it happen a second time was truly an unbelievable moment for me.
The doors are very firm.
The doors are very firm. And again, there were no other options in Charleville. That was the only place where I could nourish my body, was that vending machine.
Yeah, and you got to hydrate or dehydrate.
Exactly.
Yeah. And Ben, if you want to share, I mean, I cut all of this out, but you talk a lot about your snack in the footage. You got a Nutella Breddy.
Yeah. That was the closest thing that vending machine had to something resembling a breakfast food. And if I recall, it was pretty forgettable. The Nutella Breddy. It was not very good, which, you know, is a shame. But what are you going to do?
Oh, the Be Ready. The Breddy. Oh, I get it. Be Ready. Yeah. Breddy. I had these this season too. I thought they were delightful. Perfect Nutella to other stuff ratio. Agree to disagree.
Okay.
Anyways, yeah, Adam and I had probably the most relaxing start to any jet lag season ever because... You know, first of all, we just had 45 minutes to tool around in the square. And of course, like we pretty easily figured out what Ben was going to be up to. So like we didn't have to do a ton of research. Then we were freed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, we sat there for 45 minutes, but I mean, we figured out what Ben was going to do and what we were going to do in probably 5 to 10 minutes. I mean, we spent quite a while talking about like different fringe possibilities of stuff he might do. Well, there was a lot of discussion about how if you knew about the high speed train, that you might get off at a stop that the high-speed train doesn't stop at. Because the high-speed train only had 2 stops, and it was like it went Charleville to somewhere to Champagne-Ardennes. And there were a bunch of regional lines.
No, it went to
Sorry, which is very
close to Champagne-Ardennes.
And there's a lot of discussion that you might stop, because you were on the regional train that had more stops, at a random station between like the first stop and the stop in Rhin. Which would have sort of stranded you there with us unable to get to you because we had gotten on the high-speed line. You did not do that, nor did you even realize the high-speed train existed.
I feel like you're just dunking on Ben.
I just am talking about that was like a lengthy discussion that we had.
True. We also recorded like 7 or 8 times as much footage as we needed because we were bored.
Yeah.
Not thinking about this was the point in all of the season where we have the least ability to put random... like bits and extraneous discussion because it's at the start where it's really important to just get into it.
Yeah.
But we have all sorts of great bits in the tour of the square.
Uh-huh. We do a tour of the square. I don't think this made it in, which was sad, but the bell went off at 6:14 again, exactly at 6:14, which was very exciting to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But anyways, so we walked to the station. Weirdly, it turns out that a fan just happened to be in Charleville. Can I say fan? A viewer. We're going to say viewer. It's much more humble. A viewer.
We don't know that she liked the show.
That's true. She never said that.
That's true. We only know that she had seen it.
A person who has seen the show was in Charleville and very quickly managed to find us as we were walking to the station. Sophie informed us that the train that we wanted to take was delayed because I guess maybe she was trying to take the same one or something. I don't know. Which basically there was nothing we could do. Just meant that we had to wait more.
Yeah. Well, it was a funny thing because that was how we found out it was delayed. So we had to include that clip. But before I didn't have the clip where like we met Sophie initially, because I was just trying to really move through things. And I showed the episode to a few people and they were like, who is that lady? She really seems like she does not want to be on the show. Like, and it was really jarring when she showed up. And so I had to add in, because she had gone up to us, right? We didn't go up and bother this nice lady. She had approached us. But then in everyone's perception, without seeing that, they were like, it seems like you're bothering her. So that was, I had to add back in the meeting her clip.
Similar vibes to the Providence train station.
Oh, with Sarah.
Oh, with Sarah. Oh, yeah.
Ben met his friend with zero context.
Everyone thought she was mad at us.
Well, yeah, and we chose not to acknowledge that.
Yeah.
Anyways, we got to move through things. We don't have too long. But yeah, so we just like hang out a little bit more, try to find some food. Do not get our hands stuck in vending machines. Flex.
Yeah, and you went and got some food. You got waffles for us, and I really did not like that waffle.
Yeah. In my opinion, and I remember this from last time too, they are the most like foodie kind of food in the vending machine. Because they're like baked goods rather than just like a candy bar. But still was not excellent.
Yeah, they had a sickly sweetness to them that I really did not enjoy.
Well, they're trying to like emulate proper like Belgian, you know, like Liegeois kind of waffles, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Where you have like the sugar embedded in it, but it just doesn't really work well when it's something packed with preservatives to existing vending machines for weeks on end. They're not awesome, but they're not terrible in my opinion. Anyways, we kill some time. We check out the kind of surroundings of the station, found this lovely little bandstand, say hi to laser-eyed Muriel Bowser, and finally we're off, right?
And then we were off.
I have one really useless anecdote about this, but while we were in the train station, a train was coming in, and I don't know if it was the train squeaking on the tracks or if it was a horn of some kind, but a train made the exact sound of the first two notes of I'm a Believer. You know that song that goes, ba-da-ba-ba-ba-ba. Anyway, there's a train and it made the exact first two notes. And it was like, ba-da. And I was really excited about it and really excited to put it in the episode. And then it turned out that I did not capture it on film, which was very sad for me.
Cool. All right, Ben, your POV. Any good anecdotes that didn't make it on?
I mean, no, you really do see sort of my whole process there. Like we said, the gummy bear card was not supposed to be so hard, at least in terms of finding gummy bears. But I mean, one thing you didn't see was the relay in the train station. It had these like Haribo, like world mix bags. And when I returned from trying to find the other relay, I sort of panicked and I bought a whole bunch of those. I bought like four bags of those because I was like, I think they might have gummy bears in them. And then I was just sort of pawing through all of the bags in the middle of the train station trying to find gummy bears. And it turns out they didn't have gummy bears. So I spent the rest of the trip eating those gummies. But yeah, no, I mean, it was pretty fast. And, you know, had I been able to complete that challenge there and made it all the way to Strasbourg, you know, it would have made things very, very different for me.
Yeah, because once you get to Strasbourg, like, there are a lot of trains. It's a relatively big city, so you have a lot of optionality, and you would have been able to figure out pretty accurately which train we were on, so you would have been able to hop out of there in some direction, at least, pretty quickly.
Yeah.
That's how the jets lag, you know?
That's how the jets lag.
The jets do tend to lag in that way.
Did you have, like, a backup strategy, or was it pretty much riding on getting the budget to go to Strasbourg?
I mean, sort of like I had said, there really wasn't a backup strategy. Like, the optionality that early in the morning was like, you go there and then you go to Strasbourg or you like get fucked.
Yeah. And the other tough bit about kind of the split between, again, there's Champagne-Ardenne station and that is the TGV station. That is the high speed station. And then there's Reims station, which is mostly the slow speed station. I think some of the TGVs go through it, but that's mostly the slow speed station. So like all of the higher frequency slow speed trains leave from the station that Ben was not at. So the optionality out of Champagne-Ardenne was really just the, you know, somewhat less frequent high speed trains. So really not a lot of ton of options, again, because of this weird geography quirk with the separation of the stations that only really seems to be the case in this region. So pretty tough luck on that side of things.
Yeah. Although, you know, what I did get lucky at was that, like, having gone to that second station in the middle of truly nowhere, and I worry that it wasn't even properly captured in the footage, but the fact that, like, there wasn't even a city there, the fact that that place did then have gummy bears was kind of a miracle.
Was that Meuse?
No, that was
Lorraine,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's, like, literally a station to serve, like, a rural area, but I think it's, like, halfway between Metz and Nancy, which are two like small cities. So I guess it's kind of like serve both in a way, but it just means it's like smack dab in the middle of nowhere. Like as Ben said, like not even like a small town. It's just like a field, which is weird.
Yeah. But, you know, then I got there. I acquired my gummy bears. I don't know if you can see on the footage, but the woman was very startled at how excited I was to see gummy bears at the relay, because I was like acting like a crazy person. And then I went, you know, I was feeling very confident about this job. I knew that I would get all the flavors correct. I feel like you guys, when we wrote this card, you guys were a lot less confident about your ability to taste gummy bears.
I do not know.
Yeah, and I think I would have struggled with it. Like, I don't know how you were so good.
I would have had to practice a lot.
That's crazy.
Do you consume a lot of Haribo Gold Bears?
No.
How do you just know their flavors then?
Because the flavors taste like what they taste like.
Huh. Okay.
Maybe this is a superhuman ability. I would love to hear from our audience. Could you discern the flavors of Haribo Gold Bears so easily? I wonder. I don't know. Maybe this is a skill that I have. I didn't even realize I had.
Maybe.
I kind of think it might be.
Yeah. So, I mean, Adam and I on our side, we kind of just tool around. Like, once again, very chill start to the day because there's nothing we can really do when we get to Champagne Ardent.
Nothing we can do.
Yeah, we basically just eat more because there was more food there, which is great.
Yeah, I got a really, really gross, like, baguette that was in, like, you know, the packaging. If there's, God, I really think there are very few foods that I like less than, like, cold pre-prepared sandwiches. I hate them so much.
Most of Adam's food opinions are negative, but at least during jet lag, because we're having to deal with, you know, store-bought food, Adam has a very refined palate.
Some things are delicious, though. The thing that we haven't figured out yet, chips, for example, like prepackaged, like chips and candies are delicious, like Doritos, Lay's potato chips, like Haribo Gold, all fantastic foods. Delicious. The thing that people have done a bad job of figuring out is like fresh-ish non like junk food that you can put like, but you know who has figured out is Japan. Like onigiri is a great like grab it and go snack that's delicious. I'm just saying cold pre-prepared sandwiches suck.
They're much better in France than in the US.
They're pretty bad everywhere, but.
Okay.
You know where they're pretty good? Pret. Shout out to Pret.
Oh, Pret.
Yeah.
Pret a manger. Yeah. Well, yeah, because those are like fresh.
Yeah.
Ish.
Ish.
In fairness, I do think I just got a bad one. Because the reason that I got this one was that I had gotten a good one last time we were in France. So I was hopeful. Mm. But then this one was really bad.
Okay. Well, anyways, luckily we were able to find vending machine pizza, which we had basically no time to eat. Because we got on the train and we thought we were going to go all the way to Strasbourg.
Yes.
And then Ben was like, nah.
Yeah, I was like, nah. I had to get off in Lorraine and do my little thing. And then, you know, I mean, when I was looking at my options out of there, I mean, as you can tell in the footage, I was pretty much like, well, I think I'm screwed here. Because I knew that I had to go directly back towards you guys and that you would also be stopping at the station that I would be stopping at.
But the trouble is, Ben, the trouble is, if you had just stayed on the train...
It's true. It's true. If I had stayed on the train, the fact that it was sold out could have been my ticket out of there. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, at the time, I was convinced that you guys would have no way of really predicting that I would get off in Muz and that like your
well,
most...
Genuinely, I think it might have worked if you... Well, if the train had not been sold out, obviously, first thing. But second thing, if you had just hidden, then it might have worked. But you were just out in the open.
Yeah, well, that's a little confusing in the footage. I had literally just stepped off the train when you caught me.
More importantly, if you had hidden enough to delay things by 3 to 4 minutes, Adam would not have been gifted a 3-hour lead.
That is true. That is true. That was something that I was not even remotely considering at that point. Part of me was thinking like, okay, if they've not gotten on the train and they've, like, chosen to get off on the platform and they're tracking me down on the platform, like, they're going to get me no matter what. So a couple of minutes here or there, it doesn't really matter. But it is true that had I just sent you on a little chase for, like, 5 to 10 minutes and you couldn't have gotten onto that train to Strasbourg, you would have been stuck on the platform. I mean, I don't know what you would have done. You would have had to, like, just run away or something.
No, he would have been donezo, because there was not a train within 45 minutes.
No, I know. I think you would have had to literally run away.
Yeah. Yeah, but that wouldn't have done anything anyways. It would have just delayed the inevitable.
Well, I would have run, basically, I think what I would have done. I mean, it's actually kind of interesting. Let's play it out. I think what I would have done, I would have pulled a challenge, seen how good it was. Mm-hmm. I would have tried to get some challenges done. And then I probably would have just tried to like evade you wherever I was in a way where I could either do challenges or in a way that the way that I timed when I got caught would mean that you, Sam, would also be stuck. So that we would get closer to it being my turn again.
I think there was only about a 10-minute gap between when we were going to be freed and when the next train would have been. So I think it might have been the case that you could have like used some power-ups or something to slip through.
Yeah, like if I had gotten enough coins, I could have done the freeze chasers power-up to keep you there, and then I could have got on a train. Like, that would have been a possibility for me. There would have been options.
Now that we've talked this through, I'm so glad that this didn't happen because it sounds annoying as hell.
It would have been tough.
This would have been a horrible thing to have started the second run on.
But I think it's worth just, like, very quickly going over the sequence of events that led to Adam's three-hour lead because it's not 100% clear, I think, just how, like, kind of improbable it was because... First of all, the train that Adam and I were on, it got in early. So it was sitting at that station for like 7 or so minutes to wait for its departure time because it got in early, which is not typical. And what that meant was like, first of all, you know, because it was early, we and specifically Adam, since I was not able to run as much this season with my knee injury, but Adam was able to run to the other platform and catch Ben. And the only reason why he was able to catch Ben that quickly and Ben was not able to hide, therefore delaying the catch, was because our train was early. And then once again, because it was early and because of the fact that we originally thought Ben was going all the way to Strasbourg and had therefore booked tickets all the way to Strasbourg, because keep in mind, not only does it take probably 2 to 3 minutes to book a ticket, but it also usually they close ticket booking like 5 or so minutes before departure.
Yep.
So Adam would likely, you know, if we hadn't had that ticket all the way through, Adam would not have been able to get a ticket for that train. And without a ticket, you're not allowed to get on, both in the rules of the law.
Because that was a reserve train.
Right.
And that's important to note because there are lots of trains that we get on are not reserved seats and you can book them the second before you get on them with your Eurail pass and it's no problem. But this one required reservations.
Yeah. But once again, because it was early, there was enough time that it was still sitting on the platform for us to catch Ben, to do like the quick handover of cards and stuff, and for Adam to run back over and all that. I guess, Adam, I think one of my final questions is, was that something where you just fully realized it in the moment? Or did you realize the potential of that prior to us arriving and therefore we're like prepped to have to maybe do that quick transition? Like how much of that was spur of the moment versus planning?
Well, the truth is it was a weird combination where like I had realized because I was looking into if Ben did it essentially, that if I got on that train to Strasbourg, there were no other trains there for 3 hours. I was aware of that. I had learned that on the train on the way to Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And then like I had... No, I guess actually now that I think about it more, it was pretty planned. So like the reason you see me sprint at Ben is because I'm trying to catch him fast enough that I can get back on the train. But yeah, I mean, it was a funny thing because like I had to do a little mental check in my head to figure out if it was even legal under the rules because no one has ever done that before. We've never had anyone use a reservation that they made while they were a chaser for their run. That's never been done. We've never even had somebody get off a train, do something, and then get back on the train before it left the station, other than like maybe pull a quick card.
But there's nothing explicitly against it.
Right.
And so therefore it's allowed. And the requirement for reservations is a purely bureaucratic one.
Right, exactly.
It's not a game rule.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's like you happen to have it, fair enough. Go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the only rule we really have along those lines is you can't like purposely make extraneous bookings that you're not going to use as a chaser for the potential of using it as a runner.
Yeah.
And that's something where it's like, it's a little ambiguous, but like, you know it when you see it.
Yeah.
But this was definitely not that case. I mean, I was fully on board. I mean, I think I even booked those tickets.
You did. Yeah.
Because we really thought Ben was going all the way to Strasbourg. But I think that's, you know, a pretty good place to end. The last thing I want to remind everyone of is like, I think it's one of the final lines of this episode, but like, nobody in tag last season.
No, that line isn't until the next episode, but we can say it now.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, we can say it. So a little preview, but I mean, it's just a fact. But like, nobody in the history of tag, as in the full first season, ever had anything close to a 3-hour lead.
It's true.
That is by far the biggest lead anyone ever had in this game. So, I mean, we talked about it at the start. It's going to play out differently. And here's a perfect case of that. That is a very different thing. So I'm very excited for everyone to see next episode because I think it's an exciting one.
Yeah.
And that's all I think we can say.
Yep. Any final words?
I'm just excited for people to see this season. I really am. I think it's going to be a great season.
Yeah. The fun one. I like it.
I think there will be a lot more, you know, iconic moments and fun gameplay and good content. That's my take.
There's definitely some all-time moments this season. Anyways, that's it. All right. Well, we'll be back next week for episode 2 of season 7 of The Layover / The Jet Lag, right?
The Layover / The Jet Lag?
Yep.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Bye.